Welcome back to part two of Next on the Tee. We're not done yet. Coming up, more stories, more insight, and more reasons to love this game. Let's dive right back in. Part two starts now, right here on Next on the Tee, where golf legends live and your game gets better.
Hey, Next on the Tee Nation, thank you so much for coming back and pressing play on part two of this week's show featuring my conversation with David Eby. David has had an amazing golf journey. He's had an amazing career, culminating with spending the last 30 years as the director of golf at Banyan Golf Club down in Palm Beach, Florida. But prior to that, he played his college golf at Augusta University, where he helped kind of lay the foundation for what that school became. They won a couple of Big South Conference championships while he was there. Several years later, Patrick Reed and his teammates would come along and win back-to-back national championships there. So you'll hear about the foundation that David and his teammates laid there. Plus, while he was there, had an opportunity to go over to Augusta National and caddy. And you'll hear some of the big names that he was on the bag for. Give you a little peek. Don Shula, Jack Welch, Peter Ueberroth. Not bad threesome right there to be able to have some time with out on Augusta National as a caddy. We also get into some of the great things that he has done over the years down there in the South Florida PGA section, some other opportunities that he has had in and around some of the great courses in Ohio, plus over at Virginia, Pine Valley, things of that nature. So David's got a treasure trove of wonderful stories waiting for you. So I can't thank you enough for coming back, for making Next on the Tee a part of your regular golf content and pressing play on part two of this week's show. So sit back, relax, let David and I take your mind off everything else going on in your life for about the next half hour or so. Okay, but before we get into all of that, I want to start off by reminding you about our wonderful friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2under.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Sure, this is golf, but so is this. And this. And this is definitely golf. And so is this. Hey, that's not golf. Oh, wait, yeah, it is. And no matter what your golf is, you're going to need a store. No, a superstore. A place to get fit for a new club and walk out with it the same day. A place to find the perfect fit. A place to do whatever this is. Because this is golf. And this is golf's superstore.
Okay, now making his Next on the Tee debut with me is David Eby. Let me give you a little background on David. He played his college golf at Augusta University starting in 1986. He also earned his Bachelor of Arts degree there in economics. He helped them win several tournaments during his time there, including the 1987 Big South Conference Championship. Following his time in college, he was an assistant pro over at Augusta National through May of 1991. From there, he moved on to Pine Valley as a first assistant pro. In early 1992, he became the head golf pro at Cedar Point Club up in Suffolk, Virginia. He has been the director of golf at Banyan Golf Club in Palm Beach, Florida for almost 30 years now. It'll be 30 years in December, I believe. And I couldn't be more honored. I get to spend some time with him this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, David, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you giving me the invite, and I'm excited about this. And thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Absolutely. So, David, before we get into all the great things that you've been a part of over the course of your career, as a guy who's been down in the South Florida PGA section for almost 30 years now, there are two guys who are obviously very near and dear to my heart that are also in that section, and that's a pair of Toms, Tom Patry and Tom Wildenhouse. I have to imagine you've run into both of those guys a time or two.
Oh, yeah, they're great individuals, and I've had the opportunity. I've known Tom Patry for for close to 30 years, and Tom Wildenhuis is probably one of the best professionals in the country, and he's an example that every PGA pro tries to resemble his career trajectory. He's an awesome individual and a great golf professional.
David, take me back to your college days, starting with why you decided to play your college golf over there at Augusta University.
An interesting trail. I'm from Dayton, Ohio, so I'm a Buckeye through and through. And I played quite a bit of golf growing up. And I was recruited to play at Eastern Michigan University, went up there for a semester, and then came back home and went to school at Sinclair Community College. I got my two-year degree in business administration there, and I played on their golf team. I qualified for the National Junior College golf tournament 2 years in a row. And it was a funny coincidence. I had a friend of mine who had won the Dayton City Match Play, and he was a member of the Augusta College. It was Augusta College back in the day. And he was a member of the tournament, their team there. And he told me about the nice things at the university and the great golf program. It's a Division I-A program, and we competed against all the big schools, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson, all the big guns in the Southeast. And for me to find out, my father went to Florida State, and he played volleyball for them back in the late 50s. And Ernie Lanford, who was the coach at Augusta College at the time, also played baseball for Florida State. So they ran into each other in college. And in the recruiting process, it came up. And my father was a Pike at Florida State and was an All-American at volleyball. And Ernie Lanford was an All-American in baseball for Florida State. And they were not the same fraternities, but they ran around with the same individuals, Dick Houser and those. So it's kind of a, 2 degrees of separation there. So that's how I kind of ended up at Augusta College.
So talk about your time playing there, because you were a part of a conference championship team. You guys were building a program that would years later go on to win some national championships, obviously Patrick Reed and some other guys playing there and taking that program to that level. But you were there as they were putting together those building blocks and winning conference championships to set the program up to be what it became.
And that's all in part to Ernie Lanford. He unfortunately passed away a couple years ago, but he was an awesome person, and he laid the groundwork. And I remember when we first when we were first at Augusta College, he said, guys, you got a great opportunity to build something special here. And we had some great players. We had Taylor Smith, who played on the PGA Tour, Roger Rowland, who was there. We had some great players, Robbie Watson, Mike Gill. And, we won, I think, five or six tournaments our senior year. And unfortunately, the way they selected the teams for the NCAA was by coaches voting. So we were in what they called the Three North. So we were in the same conference with ETSU and, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson, some of those schools. So those schools tend to get the nod before our school. And when that happened that one year, Coach Lanford petitioned the NCAA, and he actually started the district qualifying program because of, the teams that we had at Augusta College at that time. So he was one of the forerunners in getting the district qualifying to select teams to go to the NCAA tournament. So that was a lot to do on his part.
While you were there, you were telling me you did some caddying over at Augusta National. How did that opportunity come your way?
It's a funny thing, because we were, Tripp Bowden and a few other of our players got to know, the caddy master at Augusta National. And Tripp Bowden, who was an author, he wrote Freddie and Me. He was an author, and he wrote about his experiences of being a caddy at Augusta National. And they were short of caddies. And Freddie Bennett called Tripp and said, hey, bring some of your college guys out to caddy. So that's how we got started out there. So we'd caddy on weekends and, late afternoons and caddy for some of the members out there. And that's how I became, exposed to, the experience at Augusta National and the opportunity to meet some really interesting and fantastic people in the golf world.
Yeah, so let's take that a step further, David. Who were some of the interesting people that you had an opportunity to be on the back for?
Don Shule, I caddied for him. I caddied for Peter Ubroth, who was then the commissioner of baseball. And, I caddied for him a couple of times. Jack Welsh, who was chairman of GE, and a couple others. Let's see. Mel Laird, who was Secretary of State during the Vietnam War. So there's quite a few interesting individuals that I had the opportunity to spend time with and all, playing golf. And it was an awesome experience doing that.
Did you get an opportunity to play the course?
Quite a bit, yes. Yeah. When I was an assistant at Augusta. Yeah, I worked there for 4.5 years.
Yeah, so talk about that. So you get through college. And out of college, all of a sudden, you're an assistant pro at Augusta National.
Yeah, it was kind of all timing because at the time I was finishing up my degree in economics and finance, and I was contemplating what I was going to do next. And Bob Klecky and Dave Spencer, were inquiring what I was going to do, and I said, well, I was going to try to get in the PGA program maybe, and that's kind of where I, kind of approached them. And all of a sudden I get a call, like a couple of weeks later and go to play golf with them at Westlake, which is a local club in Augusta, and played a weekend, golf, played on Saturday and Sunday. And, I really didn't realize I was being interviewed at that time. And so I played a couple rounds and played pretty well. I think I shot 70 or 69, a couple of times, and then played well and, sat there and, conversed with them and, had a great time and enjoyed playing with them. And I get a call the next week. They wanted to see me and talk to me about, having an opportunity to work on their staff.
I want to dip back into your college experience for one more. And you were telling me that you had an interesting experience when you guys were playing in a tournament at Furman. You had kind of a Joe Namath kind of moment when you were playing there. Do you mind sharing that story?
Oh yeah. That's one of the fun experiences of my college career. We were playing at the Furman University Invitation. It was like in early February, so the weather in the southeast can be up or down. And unfortunately, this time of the year, they had a really severe cold front that was coming through. And I remember we were getting in the van and heading up there, and it was getting cold. And we get out of the van in Greenville, South Carolina, from Augusta. It's about a 3-hour drive, and we get out and it's like 35 degrees and windy and cold, and we're playing a practice round. Back then you'd hop in the van in the morning and you go out there and you play a practice round, and then the next day you're teeing it up. And our coach says, okay guys, go ahead and play your practice round. I'm gonna go see if I can find some cold weather gear, because we didn't really have a lot of cold weather gear. And we go play our practice there and come back, and everyone's, bone cold and shivering. And he comes in with a big shopping bag full of, long sleeve shirts. And then all of a sudden we look down, he's got pantyhose. So we look at him and one of our players says, coach, he said, these are pantyhose. He says, without missing a beat, he was a great guy. He said, they're good enough for Joe Namath. They're good enough for you. He says, you're going to thank me when you wear these tomorrow when it's 35 degrees and you've got warm legs out there. So that was his introduction to it. So it was a funny comment, but we're probably the only college golf team out there that was wearing pantyhose at the time. But I can tell you, wearing those double knit Sahara pants with those pantyhose, it certainly felt a lot better than not wearing them too. So
that's great. You also spent some time at Moraine Country Club up in Kettering, Ohio, which was the site of the 1945 PGA Championship, which was won by Byron Nelson. Talk about your time looping up there.
Oh yeah, that's a great experience. And you know, the Dayton area in the Midwest, I mean, you being from Pittsburgh, I mean, the whole Midwest and the Northeast, they have such great golf courses. And you know, for me as a young player and playing that was actually our home course in high school. It's a top 100 club course, and to play on a course like that as a kid, you know, playing golf, I mean, it was an awesome experience. And you know, the caddying aspect, and we got to play on Mondays, and we played, you know, late fall, we played quite a bit too. So you play those kind of golf courses, it really did hone your game. And, you know, I became a really good player playing, you know, tougher golf courses. And also right next to it was NCR Country Club, which I worked, you know, as a high school kid there too. And at NCR South, I had the 69 PGA Championship there. And my brother was also the director of golf there for 13 years. So, you know, you play those kind of golf courses and, you know, it really kind of shapes your game. And, you know, you really can compete and play on a high level playing those kind of golf courses.
So, David, what enticed you to come back down south to Florida and Banyan Golf Club after you were up there in Ohio and the Virginia area?
Well, I'd worked at Pine Valley for 1 year too. And you know, that was another one of my stops, you know, in my apprenticeship. And I had applied for a couple jobs and had gotten down to the final two and three and kind of got bumped out. And this club was in Southeastern Virginia. It's a nice club. And you know, I got my opportunity to become the head professional there in 92. So I was 25, 26 years old and had my first head professional job, you know, which is quite an experience. It was a great club, and it was a wonderful place to start my career.
And when I was looking online, David, the facilities you guys have down there at Banyan Golf Club, they look fantastic. Talk about the golf course and all the things that you have available there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we probably have one of the best clubs in southeastern Florida. And, you know, you've got some tough competition here, and we've got a wonderful club. We just went through some extensive renovations in 2018. We did some golf course improvements, and we just recently completed an upgrade of our practice range and practice facilities. But what makes a great club is the members and the staff that you have. And we have a fantastic membership, and we've got a great president. We've got a great board of directors, and we got a fantastic staff. So, you know, that's what makes great golf clubs. And, you know, we certainly have that. And, you know, we're excited for the future, and we have, you know, a great golf course and a great club to show for it.
You also have a fantastic practice facility, which reminds me really of the one at Augusta National now. Talk about the amazing practice facility that your members have access to there.
Yeah, we just completed it this summer. In fact, it'll be open Friday. It's the first day. We tripled the size of our tee space, and we improved the short game area. So we've got two outstanding short game areas now to hone your short game. And we've got a back end practice area too. So we're headed in the right direction as far as having all the amenities that, you know, fine golf clubs have.
David, just a couple more before I let you go. And you have certainly seen the game go through a lot of evolution over the years. And I want to get your thoughts. Are we better off with all the technology that you and your fellow PGA professionals have at your fingertips nowadays? Or does it kind of get us sidetracked sometimes? A lot of players like me looking at all of the data, focusing on things like smash factor and, you know, launch angles and things of that nature, and not necessarily paying enough attention to what our ball flight is doing and that sort of thing. Are we getting too technical in the data now? What's your thoughts about where instruction is nowadays?
Well, I think, that's an excellent question. And I think it's a great perspective. I think the technology is fantastic because it can pretty much narrow you down to, you know, what the proper shafts are, if you're heading in the right direction, as far as, you know, the proper ball, you know, as far as spin and ball flight, and also with the shafts, if you have the right shaft flex. I think that's a great tool in respect to that. But I also think that, you know, there's nothing like digging out of the dirt. You know, you go out there and you hit it up, you know, hit it on the range and you try to find it yourself. And I go back to when I was first starting off at a club called Kitty Hawk. It was a public golf course. I would sit in the back of the range and hit balls all day. And I would work up, you know, the left side of the tree and then, you know, go all the way up. And then I'd work back the other way and learn how to hit shots. And then I would kind of go out on the golf course and say, okay, there's the ball that where you need to hit a cut shot or a draw shot. You know, I think some of that's kind of lost now with the technology. Now everyone's hitting it so long and they're just wedging. I think some of the shot making has kind of come out of the game, but I think a lot of it has to do with the ball that you're playing with too. The ball is a little harder to work, you know, left and right. So I think some of the nuances of the game have changed because of the technology, you know, but now you're hitting the ball farther, which is great. It's great for our members too. They, you know, you give them a golf ball and they see the performance and you give them a shaft and they hit it 10 or 15 yards farther. You know, that's great for them. They're enjoying the game. So I think that's the great aspect of some of the technology. It's letting people play at a higher level for a longer period of time, which is a great thing for the game of golf.
David, you mentioned just a moment ago, you know, kind of workability of the golf ball and the artistry in the game. Is that something any of your students ever ask you about? Do you ever work on with them, you know, how to hit a shot that fades a little or hooks a little or get it around this tree or get it around the dog leg? I feel like that part of the game, to your point a moment ago, is something that's been lost because the ball flies so much straighter and so much farther now. That's really not a part of the game as much as it was when you and I were growing up.
Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, we do have a lot of people looking to work the ball, but you know, it's I always tell everyone and the students I work with too, we always work on the short game. Everyone wants to hit the ball long, but where you're really going to score is, you know, from 100 yards in. And an interesting story that I became real friendly with Bruce Fleischer. He was a member of our club, and you know, I had the opportunity to play with him right before he went on the Champions Tour when he was about 47, 48. And we sat down to lunch, and I was with a member, and the member said, "Bruce, how do you think you're going to do on the senior tour?" And Bruce says, "Well, I'm working with Dave Pels right now." He says, "I'm working on 100 yards in, and I think I might be able to do some damage out there when I get out there." And the first year he was out there, he won, I think, 6 or 7 times. He won 4 times in a row, and he had the highest birdie conversion on par fives, you know, that year that he won. I mean, he dominated the senior tour for the first 3 or 4 years, coming right out of the blocks. And that was, you know, really pointed my direction as far as, hey, let's work on a short game because that's where you can really make a difference on your scoring. So sure, short game is it. May not be fun, but you get it up and in, that's where you're going to score. So
yeah, 100%. Do you find students get excited? I mean, it seems like everyone's chasing distance, right? And you know, hitting it far off the tee and trying to bomb it 320, 330 off the tee, you know, chick dig the long ball and all of that sort of thing. But do you find that they get interested and excited about practicing the short game?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You show them some different shots and you know, out of the bunkers, you show them a few different techniques. And you know, I'm always a big advocate of where's your percentages, you know, around the green. Okay, let's pick a basic shot and let's try to refine that by using some different clubs to achieve different types of trajectories and different types of shots, you know, to minimize the mistakes you might make around the green. So if you can go around it, you know, and around and cut, you know, a third of a shot every 3 holes, okay, you're looking at 5 to 6 shots around right there. So, you know, it's, you know, that's the difference between being a 20 handicapper or being a 15 or 16, you know, and so those little shots here and there, you know, they make up your score.
Yeah, and the same thing right on the putting green. That's another place where my buddies don't really want to spend much time. But as several of your peers have said to me, you know, you take people that, are, you know, like me, like I shoot 85, something like that. You know, we 3-putt 3, 4, 5 times around. Boy, if you can, you know, make a couple more of those putts, the next thing you know, you're tickling 80 and trying to break 80. But that's another place where I have found a lot of people just don't want to spend that much time practicing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, going back to my college days, one thing that Coach Lanford had us do, too, was during our times qualifying for tournaments, we always practiced on the nice days and we always played qualifying rounds on the less than desirable days. It might be raining, it might be cold, and you learn how to play in those conditions. So I tell everyone, you know, if it's a rainy day, go out there and learn how to play. If you can play in less than ideal conditions, you can certainly play on a sunny day on 75 degrees. And then one other thing he said too is that to be a really good player, the par threes are generally where you're going to tend to make your higher numbers. So he said twos don't add up very fast on a scorecard. So every time you step up to a par three, you know, zero in, you know, try to make sure you don't make a big number there, and it'll certainly help your scores. So he would always focus on the par threes, and that always stuck out in my mind too, of how you can really play successful, good golf, you know, concentrate on the par threes.
David, one more before I let you go, and I'd like to take that a step further. Is there a lesson, a swing thought, something that you can impart on our listeners that might help them go out there this weekend and shave a stroke or two off their scores?
That's another great question. And I always tell everyone, you can never go wrong with tempo and timing. You know, you get your basic grip, you know, your grip and stance, you know, good alignment, and make sure you drop down an alignment stick or something that'll help you get lined up. But always think of tempo and timing. I use a little app too, a metronome app that helps you with tempo. And you start off hitting, you know, less than full wedge shots just to get tempo. So the next time you're warming up for a round of golf, you know, hit 40 to 50 yard shots and get good tempo, and then just kind of work your warm up, you know, based on that tempo, and then go up to the driver instead of going up there and ripping four or five, you know, hard drives. You know, start with the wedges and work your way up and develop tempo. That'll always help you when you're playing golf.
David, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the things that you're out there doing, whether they're doing it online or over social media?
They can contact me at Banyan Golf Club, and, you know, I would love to hear from some of your listeners, and anytime you have a question, you know, I'm more than welcome. My email is d.eby@banyangolfclub.com. And, you know, I certainly appreciate you taking the time, Chris, and, you know, thank you for having me on your webcast.
Well, David, I hope this is the first of many visits we get to do with you here on the show. You're fantastic, my friend.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you for taking the time. And like I said, tempo is the key to the good golf swings.
David, take care. All the best to you and your family. I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
See you, David.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
That is David Eby. E-B-Y is the spelling of his last name. d.eby@banyangolfclub.com is where you can send him an email. If you've got some questions for him, you'd like to get involved with him, please reach out. A guy that just has done so much in our game. And look, you don't end up at a club like the Banyan Golf Club down there in Southeast Florida for almost 30 years. Like I said, I believe December is his 30th anniversary down there. You don't spend that many years in the South Florida PGA section without being great at what you do, and particularly at a great club like Banyan Golf Club. And look, go online, check that place out. The facilities that they have there are just fantastic. And when I was looking at the new practice facility that David was talking about, I mean, if you've ever seen any of the great practice facilities, and I've been privileged to go out at Augusta National a bunch of times during the tournament week and look at that fantastic practice facility, this one I think is right on par with what they've got there. So kudos to David and everybody out there for all the great things that they are doing to innovate and advance that golf club. And again, looking back at David's career at Augusta College at the time, Augusta University now, he was a player there in the mid to late 80s that started to lay the foundation for all the great things that they did. You heard him talk about winning you know, 5, 6, 7 golf tournaments during the course of the college career that he had there each year, and then won some conference championships. Later on, they would build on that and win some national championships. So that tells you what a great golf talent David is. And then you, when you see the places that he has been an instructor at, again, you just don't walk into Augusta National just because you happen to be playing golf at Augusta College. There's a reason why they chose David to go in over there as an assistant, and then to go on to places like Pine Valley and be a first assistant pro there. And then some of the other great places that he has spent some time up there in Kettering and over in Virginia, now back down to South Florida. Tells you everything you need to know about what great instruction you're going to get when you reach out to David. So hopefully, like I say, this is the first of many opportunities that we'll get to spend some time with David. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again go out to Ron Syrek, Jeff Smith, and David Eby for joining me. Scheduled to join me next week are Tom Patry will finally be back with us. Canadian Golf Hall of Famer Paul Horton will make a return visit. Paul is absolutely fantastic. And Titleist Global Sales and Marketing Executive Charlie Fisher will make a long overdue return to the show. So, folks, it's going to be a really fun one. I hope you'll be here with us as well. I want to thank our friends again over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to triblive.com. You can find this show by then clicking on the sports section tab, and then you're going to find the most recent episode front and center for you on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on Sports and then Podcast Network. You'll see the Next on the Tee logo. Click on that, and many of the most recent episodes from this season are right there for you as well. You can also find the show by going over to Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, GolfNewsNet.com. Pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, we're going to be on there as well. And as always, a big thanks to the wonderful folks at Good Pods for continuing to make Next on the Tee one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there from your favorite device. But like I say, each and every time, biggest thanks go out to each and every one of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on TribLive or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.